If American citizens would have known beforehand what was inside the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP for short, Congress never would have had the courage to pass the Fast Track or Trade Promotion Authority, which effectively gave President Obama a green light to present the TPP to Congress in the near future. Why do I say this? Because it would have been massive demonstrations and a multitude of angry citizens descending upon congressional and Senate offices, demanding the agreement negotiations be stopped immediately. Instead, Washington elites cloaked the Trans-Pacific Partnership negotiations in secrecy, and what little was leaked to the press was presented as a positive development for American job prospects and the economy. What Fast Track actually did was handcuff the Senate and House of Representatives such that the only acceptable vote for the trade agreement would be a simple yes or no. What is the likely impact upon the American job market of the Trans-Pacific Partnership? What do we need to know? And what can we do now about the steady encroachment upon our life and liberty as Americans? Jerry Robinson joins me to discuss these questions and more next on the Soaring Eagle Radio Show.
Remember that your failure to be informed does not make me a wacko.
The time has come, the walrus said, to talk of other things. Of shoes and ships and sealing wax and cabbages and kings.
My mind doesn't work that way. I got this real moron thing I do. It's called thinking. And I'm not a very good American because I like to form my own opinions. I have certain rules I live by. My first rule, I don't believe anything the government tells me. And I don't take very seriously the media or the press in this country.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
Nine most terrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. You take the blue pill. The story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
It's called the American Dream because you have to be asleep to believe it.
Hello, and welcome to Soaring Eagle Radio. Your host is Mike Spaulding. Get ready to be challenged and encouraged as you consider today's news and Mike's commentary from a biblical perspective. Now, let's join Mike.
Hi, friends. Welcome to the Soaring Eagle Radio Show. I'm your host, Mike Spaulding. My guest tonight is Jerry Robinson. He is an economist, author of Bankruptcy of Our Nation, Your Financial Survival Guide, a columnist, international conference speaker, and the editor of the financial website, Follow the Money, which is located at ftmdaily.com. In addition, he hosts a weekly radio program entitled Follow the Money Weekly, an hour-long show dedicated to deciphering the week's economic and geopolitical news. He is the editor-in-chief of the popular economic newsletter, Follow the Money Quarterly, and is a frequent commentator on The Blaze, Fox News, Time Magazine, WorldNet Daily, and Town Hall, to name a few. Welcome to the Soaring Eagle Radio Show, Jerry.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Thank you. The Trans-Pacific Partnership is one of the most devastating agreements ever produced, in my opinion. The narrative coming from our government and the corporate-controlled media suggests that the TPP will be the greatest achievement of the Obama presidency and will have lasting positive effects for the U.S. economy and American job seekers. Now, I certainly agree that the Trans-Pacific Partnership will have lasting effects, but I don't agree that they're going to be positive. Jerry, could you enlighten our listeners as to what the TTP is exactly and what nations and corporate representatives are involved in hammering out these details?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Well, look, you know, when it comes to economics, you know, one of the things that you learn in Economics 101, and that's what I cut my teeth on. You know, my background is economics. I'm a trained economist. And one of the things that we learn, you know, early on is this idea of free trade. And we learned that from the good book of Adam Smith and The Wealth of Nations. And we learned that, you know, it's very smart for countries to have some sort of, some sort of competitive advantage in whatever they particularly have.
Yes.
And to, you know, export the goods that they can do so well and have other countries do the same for them. And everything works out well in the end. Well, the problem is that what this Trans-Pacific Partnership is it's not a free trade deal per se. It's actually the way we describe it is a Trojan horse filled with a shocking bonanza of special rights and privileges for corporations.
Wow.
I mean, that's really what it is. And so the TPP, many people who have maybe not heard of this before, although I know many people are beginning to hear about it because the corporate-controlled media, as you mentioned, are now having to talk about it because it's actually making its way, through the process of the legislative process. But where we are today is a devastating free trade, quote unquote, bill that is going to rip apart our already fragile economy by propping up other countries. It's a secret trade deal that, in fact, I don't know if you've heard this before, but the fact is that many of the senators and the congressmen who have actually seen the bill, when they go in to view the bill, they have to do it in a secret private room. They cannot take any of their staff with them. They cannot even bring a pen and paper into the room so as to take any notes. And this bill, by the way, was written by 600 corporate sponsors, 600 corporate advisors. I mean, we literally have our bills now coming out of Washington written by corporations. It's an absolute travesty. The countries involved are Australia, Canada, Chile, Japan, Malaysia, Mexico, New Zealand, Peru, Singapore, Vietnam, and Brunei. Brunei, by the way, is a Sharia state law, a Sharia law state. And so you have on one side, you know, the GOP constantly complaining and expressing all kinds of Islamophobia about anything having to do with Muslims and how we have to stop all. And then at the same time, they're brokering, quote unquote, free trade deals with states that hold Sharia law. So it's a very schizophrenic type of time in Washington, although it probably always has been, much more so now. The TPP, 12 countries, 40% of global GDP is composed of these 12 nations, and one-third of all of global trade. I mean, this really is a global deal that is very akin to NAFTA, but except on steroids. And it's one of these things, Mike, that as you said so eloquently at the very beginning, if people really knew what this was, if they really knew what this TPP was, it just would never pass.
Yeah,
they rely upon our ignorance.
There are so many red flags in what you just described, Jerry. I don't even know where to start in pointing those out. Perhaps the secrecy issue. Go into a room, you're not allowed to take any notes, not allowed to take anything out, take anything in. You can peruse it, but what you described is our legislators coming out, shaking their heads and saying, if not officially, at least unofficially, that this is a horrible, horrible deal for the American economy.
It's a horrible deal for the American economy. It's a horrible deal for the crumbling middle class here in America. I mean, when you look at the average worker today, I mean, they are faced with so many problems. Much of it has come through this, that what we call Reaganomics, this trickle-down economics,
yeah,
which has clearly been one of the biggest jokes on Americans.
Yeah.
I know it's sad because those are the kinds of things that, you know, people want to believe. We really want to believe that people who become wealthy want to share it with the poor. It makes it makes some sort of sense in our minds, I guess, and maybe in our truer selves, maybe that altruism maybe does exist somewhere, but it certainly doesn't exist in reality. In fact, there was a new study put out that showed that over the last several years, the global wealthy, the wealthy across the globe, have siphoned off $21 trillion in money and taken it offshore into global tax havens. I mean, this is what we're seeing. And so you have companies like Apple, you know, who are sitting on $200 billion in cash, other companies that are holding cash offshore. And these kinds of deals, like the TPP, put us in direct competition with other countries like Vietnam, who has a current minimum wage of 52 cents per hour. Remember whenever we went to with NAFTA, that was a complete disaster for America. Ross Perot back in 1992 was one of the few people who was actually warning against this, and he turned out to be dead on in the fact that the minimum wage in Mexico is 70 pesos a day. It's like $5 at current exchange rates. Yeah. And so if you're a company and you're able to exploit cheap foreign labor, then you want to do that. But why would you want to have a free trade deal in place first? Because you want to be able to have some sort of certainty. And that's exactly what corporations are getting out of the TPP. They get certainty that is built into the TPP. And with this certainty will come an exodus of U.S. businesses seeking to exploit cheap foreign labor. Yeah. And still, at the same time, maintaining their unparalleled access to the world's greatest consumer market, and that is the U.S.
The U.S. Jerry, you mentioned NAFTA just a moment ago, and the similarities between NAFTA and TTP are striking. Although, I have heard you refer to TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, as NAFTA on steroids.
It is, and NAFTA, as I mentioned, was a complete disaster for America. More than 1 million jobs were lost in the United States. As I mentioned, in Mexico, you have minimum wage at 70 pesos a day, $5 a day. I think it's like it works out to like 62 cents an hour. I mean, if you're a company in America and you have the ability to cross over down south and you have a free trade deal worked out to where the Mexican government can't shut you down, It has to, play by a certain set of rules that you're aware of and you have, you helped write, then, of course, you're going to go down and you're going to exploit that cheap labor and then turn right back around and sell your goods right back into the United States. You know, today, the top 0.1% of our nation owns almost as much wealth as the bottom 90% combined. I mean, that's the kind of problem that we're dealing with. So when you have a new trade deal that is going to threaten even the existing jobs that we have today, and you're going to tempt these corporations to go over to Vietnam, to go over to these other much lower paid countries, you're just asking for it. Yeah. That's what this is. That's why the American people should demand that this not be passed. But again, they've been so secretive about it, and they've made it so difficult. And here's the problem. What's so ironic about this is that the biggest cheerleader of the TPP and the Fast Track has not been the Democratic Party. It's been the Republican Party. Yeah. The Republican Party and Mr. Obama, President Obama. Yeah. And so up until this point, the GOP has fought tooth and nail everything that President Obama has tried to pass. Obamacare. I mean, you just go down the list and you'll just see that they've tried to block every single thing, but suddenly they trust him on trade. That should really tip us off.
Well, that's right, Jerry. And you that's an excellent point. So that's another red flag. TPP is about government officials, but probably more, and I don't know this for a fact, but I'm going to say that of the 600 government and business leaders, corporate leaders, probably a majority of them are corporate leaders and not government leaders that are negotiating this this secret deal. That should be of concern immediately. When we've got corporate leaders that are writing laws and negotiating secret deals, I can guarantee you they're not doing this for the benefit of the citizens of these nations that are involved.
Just as trickle-down economics doesn't work, this doesn't work either. The corporations are never, ever, under any circumstance, thinking about your best interest. They're always, and by law, they have to think about their own best interest. Yeah. You know, this is why we stand so strongly here at our organization against things like Citizens United, which was a terrible, terrible Supreme Court ruling that allowed corporations, multinational corporations even, to give as much money as they want to politicians and never have to disclose it, not even have to disclose the political contributions to their shareholders. And this is known as dark money. And the problem with this is so obvious. I mean, I'll tell you, for example, I live in Northwest Arkansas. And if I was going down to vote for my, you know, let's say I was going down to vote for my mayor, and suddenly I found out that a whole bunch of people living in Nevada were propping up his opponent, you know, I would be wondering, why are people in Nevada wanting to finance the other candidate in this city? And it would make me scratch my head and wonder. Yeah. Well, that's what we see all across the country today, because corporations now are trying to prepare the way for them to move into different areas. Well, this even gets worse, because as we take a look at what's happening now on an international scale, countries like China, countries like Russia can set up shell companies, thanks to Citizens United, and they can flow dark money into to promote their candidate of choice.
Yes.
So we have literally opened the floodgates to international, multinational corporations being able now to influence our elections.
Yes.
We are not a nation of the people, for the people, by the people. I mean, this is not what we have anymore. It is not what our founders envisioned at all. Or perhaps, to be more cynical, perhaps it is exactly what they had hoped to set up. Because when you take a look back, one of the things that we see is that James Madison warned, along with he took the warning from Aristotle, that said, if you ever allow democracy to get out of hand, the whole thing will blow up. That's why they set up the checks and balances. That's why they set up a democratic republic. Mm-hmm. But today, what we see now is this great divide. I mean, you have one family, Walmart's Walton family, now owns more wealth than the bottom 42% of Americans combined. And we consistently see this income inequality rising. At some point, it breaks. At some point, it breaks. And this is what Madison was worried about, is that when the people finally realize that they can themselves, that they are themselves the greatest force in this system, they will vote themselves money from the public treasury and destroy, completely implode the government. And so the rich are provoking the poor, and we are living right here in a very, very dangerous time, I think, in world history.
Yeah, for our listeners, I just want to mention that Jerry talked about the recent, it was 2010, Citizens United decision by the Supreme Court. You can go research that on your own. But basically, what that did was the Supreme Court decided that corporations would be viewed as individuals, and that they would be then enabled to contribute any money that they desired, and that they didn't have to tell their shareholders anything about it. So as Jerry very brilliantly described, that creates an opportunity for all kinds of corruption. And so now the presidency isn't about domestic voters anymore. It's about how much money. And my own guess is that it's probably in the multi-billions of dollars that candidates are now receiving. That enables them, and just follow it, it enables them to buy media, it enables them to buy, influence, feet on the ground, organizers, door knockers, literature, you name it. So the balance has definitely tipped away from citizens in America uniting or voting for their president, and it's now fallen into the hands of corporations. So offshoring American jobs then is one of the things that's going to happen. And we saw that under NAFTA. You mentioned a loss of a million manufacturing jobs. I read someplace too, Jerry, where that also included in those million jobs, probably about 50,000 manufacturing facilities shuttered their doors.
That's right. Yeah. And the million jobs is actually a fairly low estimate. I mean, that is just what they've been able to gather. Yeah. But, during that time back in the 90s, you had companies like GE, Chrysler and Caterpillar publicly promising that if the Congress would pass the NAFTA bill, that suddenly there would be all of these brand new U.S. jobs, and all of a sudden people were going to have all these great high paying jobs. But instead, literally, as soon as NAFTA was passed, as the ink was drying, those same corporations announced layoffs and plant closings and moved many of their operations to labor-cheap Mexico and started paying what they had been paying here, jobs that paid, very good wages, they began paying, you know, 62 cents an hour or less down in Mexico. It makes common sense, but if you trust corporations, you're going to run into trouble. And that's what has happened here in America. We've given them far too much leeway. We now allow them to buy elections, and TPP is just a travesty. It is the wrong direction for America.
One of the things that I discovered in doing some research on this, Jerry, is that TPP contains all sorts of things that has nothing to do with free trade and enabling that, but it has everything to do with making it easier for corporations to conduct business in foreign countries without, well, virtually without any liability issues. One of the things that I found was that they're not beholden to national environmental or health laws or regulations when they go in and set up shop in another place.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what these corporations don't want. They don't want to be held accountable for their own actions. They want to be able to destroy the earth. They want to be able to have, you know, not have to worry about safety standards. I mean, this is why many of the, you know, many corporations are running over to China. That's why we saw, you know, the WTO deal with China back in 2001. That was another disaster. We talk about NAFTA, but, you know, the opening of the doors to China, you know, has made everything now made in China because the labor is so cheap and corporations went over there and decided to exploit the cheap labor. And so, yes, I mean, you know, China is a has been for a long time a corporate heaven in the fact that they don't have to worry about food safety. They don't have to worry about, you know, the environment. Yeah. But they're beginning to crack down too. So as a result of this, the United States is looking for some other places to go and exploit. I hate to say that. Isn't that terrible?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's really what this is.
It's really what it is, yeah. It sounds cynical to some folks. But we're just speaking the truth and saying this is really what's behind it. And here's an example, just so folks understand. Embedded in the TPP is legislation that is going to roll back all of the Wall Street reforms that we've managed to get on the books, which are far too few, I think. And don't you think that's ironic that this administration, the Obama administration, that came in with such a fierce countenance about taking on the bankers and making things right for the American citizens, that they've actually negotiated this deal that's going to roll all of those back and allow Wall Street to have free rein again?
It's kind of surprising, but it's really not. I mean, President Obama has been a pretty big disappointment to those who were hoping to see some pretty stiff rules passed against these two big to fail banks. I mean, these two big to fail banks back in 2008 were a disaster waiting to happen. Those of us who, you know, had our eyes open saw this thing coming, and then after it implodes, they put up these very weak laws. I mean, the fiscal reform that was done, or the financial reform that was done, you know, kudos to to those folks who fought for it in Washington, but they fought against it tooth and nail because the financial industry is one of the biggest corporate donors in Washington. And so they were obviously fighting any kind of accountability. And so, you know, we've been seeing this rollback now. In fact, I just saw a couple of days ago, I believe, I'm trying to remember who it was, or I think it was Senator Richard Shelby, I think, who actually had added an amendment to the highway transportation bill that the Senate is trying to pass right now. And in it, in this amendment, was literally another bill that was like it was actually longer than the bill itself. This amendment was 184 pages long, and it was basically dismantling all of the reforms that had been made by the Obama administration on Wall Street. So Wall Street doesn't want any regulations, obviously. They constantly tell us that free markets are best when they're left alone, and yet they don't want that applied to themselves, obviously.
Yes, yes.
So it's socialism for the rich, not for the poor.
Yeah. And so, Jerry, when we talk about Wall Street, is it fair to say that they really had a fox in the hen house with Eric Holder in the attorney general spot?
Oh, of course. I mean, he didn't do anything. He didn't do anything to prosecute any of the banks, these two big to fail banks, which now, by the way, here in 2015 are 30 to 40% larger than they were back in 2008. So we've allowed them to get larger. We're now trying to pull back any kind of regulation that we had. Eric Holder, yeah, absolutely. I mean, he was at a law firm called Covington and Burling before he came into the administration. When he came into the Obama administration, he was confronting these Wall Street banks, but never. Yeah, he never convicted a single one. And the law firm that he had worked for, Covington and Burling, actually had many of the top Wall Street firms as their clients. As soon as Eric Holder left his position in the Obama administration, he went right back to Covington and Burling. This was news. They had a corner office waiting for him, and he moved right back in. And now he is no doubt representing the same banks and the same banksters that he refused to prosecute during his time as the nation's attorney general.
Yeah. Speaking of the law, another frightening aspect of TPP is that it enables corporations, and this is going to surprise our listeners, Jerry, but it enables corporations to sue host governments at just about every level for practices that they perceive to be against their best interests. Is that crazy?
That's exactly right. Yeah, and that's unbelievable. This TPP, and in fact, similar things existed in the NAFTA bill and some other free trade agreements. But this one really they've worked out all the kinks because they've seen problems with the with this deal in the past, and so now they've been able to write it perfectly to kind of make it airtight. And so when a corporation comes into a foreign country and begins operating according to this TPP and the host country in some way impedes the progress of that particular corporation, if that corporation feels as if the regulations of a particular town, whether it's local or a state law or even a federal law, if they feel that that is impeding their rights as a corporation, because after all, corporations are people, then they are now able to actually take that particular authority, whether it's a local government, a state government, or a federal government, to a tribunal, either by the World Bank or at the United Nations, and they are able to then have a trial before a tribunal, and to find out if any kind of sin has been committed. And if so, grievances can be taken care of, and this is a travesty. I mean, especially for the GOP, who has constantly been beating the drums about how we don't want to get involved in this global one world order that they're always concerned about, and yet when the TPP comes along, they just jump right on board.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And that's just to be clear for our listeners I don't want to be too rude, but I know that some of our listeners view the Republican Party as the savior of America. And I just got to tell you that this TPP fiasco should be enough to convince them that that's just not the case. You're talking about a party that they at least talk about smaller government. TPP is going to expand it dramatically. The Republican Party talks about wanting to get out of the United Nations, and yet they're voting to empower the United Nations to essentially have sovereignty over the United States. To bypass our laws.
You know what,
right?
Mike? Yeah, you're right. And you know what? Whenever you bring that up, that's so important, because some people live in a world that is black and white. It is, if you say anything bad about Republicans, well, then they have you pegged. You must be a Democrat.
Yeah.
If you say anything positive about Republicans, then you must be anti-Democrat. Well, the truth is that both parties have sold us down the river. Both parties represent the corporations and not the people. And so, a rational American should be looking at both of these parties and saying, what is the deal? And why are they constantly serving the corporate masters? And then but then we need to even stop that language, because we realize, why are they serving them? Because they pay them more. The corporations pay them more than we do in taxes. Therefore, we don't stand a chance against the corporations. So we have to change the country. And the way you do that, the way you change the system, is you have to get money out of politics. And that's going to be an extremely hard fight for those, especially whenever people don't realize that is really what the fight is all about. Many people think it's something else. That's really where the rubber meets the road. If you want to change the country, you have to get the corporations out of the business of pandering to politicians, because otherwise you don't stand a chance as a middle-class working person.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly right. And my listeners are very familiar. They've heard me say this many, many times, but the only difference between the Republicans and the Democrats is the speed at which they want to enslave us. There's very little difference otherwise. So the House and Senate recently fell in line like a flock of obedient lambs being led to slaughter when the global bankers, the lobbyists, the corporations offered massive, and I mean massive amounts of money. And presto, the yes votes came flooding in from both chambers that gave the fast-track authority to the president. Now, one of the things that I wanted to point out, and Jerry, you already know this, but that authorization vote in the House passed by one vote. 218 votes were needed. It received 219. And just for our listeners, what the fast track does is it limits Congress's time to review the agreement and gives them no ability to amend it. The only recourse that they have is to vote yes or no. And so, Jerry, what's the likelihood of a no vote when TTP comes before?
It really all depends on how loud the American people are about this. The majority of them, honestly, still don't even know what the TPP is. And even if they did, they wouldn't know the first thing about what to do to stop it. And I think that based upon that, and based upon the fact that we have such low information voters and we have such a corrupt media that is completely bought by the corporations. I mean, again, we're making it sound as if the corporations are evil. They're not. In fact, the corporations are operating according to what they have been given. They're operating according to their own best interests. You know, when we think about the Republican Party, and I'll come back to your question in a minute, when we think about the Republican Party, you know, I've heard it said this way, and I think this is really said best. You have three different people within the Republican Party. You have the rich. You have the very, very rich, the billionaire class, that obviously benefits from the policies that put forth by the Republicans. Then they have, besides the rich, then you have the paid shills. You have the people who are willing to promote what the billionaire class wants. And then at the very bottom of the rung, the third group, are the suckers. They're the ones who listen to the paid shills and believe, and they vote against their own best interest. So corporations are always voting in their own best interest. But what the corporation's job to do with you and I is to convince us to vote against our own best interest. So if they can get us to vote against our own best interest, and then they can vote in their best interest, then you create what we have now. And that is, corporatism, where corporations, and it's really a kind of a version of fascism. I mean, fascism really is corporate and state led type of government.
Yes.
So we really have a corporate fascism almost here in America. And so for the American people to realize that they have to stop voting against their own best interests, I think is one of the first things that needs to occur. But again, this goes back to the idea of this is why I really believe, Mike, that we are on the edge of something extremely explosive here in America, because again, Aristotle, mm-hmm. Yeah. Aristotle said the dangers of democracy make it among the most dangerous form of governments. Madison, as I mentioned, James Madison, the founder, said be very, very careful with democracy, because again, it's the mobs. When the mob rule, when they figure out that they have been had by the corporate billionaire class, they're going to revolt. And when they revolt, they have enough voting power to be able to pull it off. So the way that this system keeps going, the way that we keep this thing kind of hobbling down the road and not coming to a full halt is just to keep the status quo as it is. Because again, if the people wake up, if they fully realize what has been done to their country, what has been done to them, how they have been fleeced, then we see the breakdown of everything that we know, because the people will rise up and they will demand money from the rich, and then you will have absolute class warfare, absolute struggle beyond anything that you can imagine. And these are the things that, you know, our predecessors feared and they knew were inherent in our form of government. And so it's interesting to be living in this time where we are nearing that, where you have this income inequality constantly we hear about. And of course, you see the constant buying off of politicians. There was a story that came out today. I don't know if you caught it. House members who voted to stop states from mandating GMO labeling received $30 million from agribusiness and, you know, from the big ag industry. So basically, they vote based upon the money that is given to them. Many people kind of know that, but they aren't angry enough about it to stop putting in the same bozos into Washington.
Yeah, and let me give some examples for our listeners in case you think Jerry is just, you know, kind of exaggerating. I can tell you that he's not. Paid to vote yes on fast track authorization. The research that I did indicates that there was almost $200 million that was distributed among lobbyists to congresspersons, to senators. And this may shock some of our listeners, but Speaker of the House John Boehner received $5.3 million for a simple yes vote on fast tracking. Of course, John is a Republican from Ohio, my home state. Congressman Kevin McCarthy, a Republican from California, received $2.4 million. Paul Ryan, a Republican from Wisconsin, once a darling of the right, received $2.4 million. Pat Taiberi, another congressman from Ohio, $1.6 million. All four of those are Republican congressmen. Money is being given to our legislators to sell out America. That should anger anybody that's listening to this, to the show.
Yeah, speaking of John Boehner, you know, back in, I think it was 2009, he admitted in a PBS special, I think the name of the, I can't remember the name of the documentary now, but it was about, you know, about, it was about corporate, well, I mean, I think it was called The People and the Power Game, I think is what it was called, if I remember it properly. But John Boehner, he was caught red-handed actually handing out checks on the House floor right before the vote. And he obviously admitted to this. And, of course, we found out later on this is kind of how business is done. So, I mean, checks were actually being handed out from corporations by John Boehner, the House Speaker, to voting members of the House right before a big vote. And this one had to do with big tobacco. But again, I mean, this is the kind of system that we live in, and it's coming to a head. People can feel it.
Yeah, they sure can. I don't believe it's an understatement to say that corporations and bankers have essentially taken control of what policies are approved or blocked by the government of the United States. I don't think that's too harsh of a statement to make. Many Americans, I hope not the majority of these of those that are listening to the show, but they may be wondering why they haven't heard anything about the TPP. And you mentioned it earlier, Jerry, but I just want to reiterate it again. They're not hearing much about it because the media is corporately owned. You can trace back who owns the media, and they're just not going to put out stories that are not flattering to their parent companies. So America's—they're basically being kept in the dark—is what's going on here with that. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. I mean, that's exactly what's happening. The corporate-controlled media. We constantly refer to the corrupt, corporate-owned, corporate-controlled media. You know, people don't realize this. I mean, it took me years to finally wake up to this idea and this fact that the media. 95% of what we see and hear on a daily basis that we call news comes to us from a handful, you know, five or six different corporations that are multinational corporations. And of course, as we talked about before, corporations move according not to your best interest, but to their best interest. And so That's they right. create news organizations that are looking out for you, quote unquote, or they're, you know, they're fair and balanced, or they're going to bring you the real hard news. But in reality, they're just corporate. They're corporations. They're just like McDonald's down the street. Their goal is to make a hamburger, right, and sell it, and sell as many of them as they possibly can. In their case, they're not selling hamburgers. They're selling ads. So they need to find a lot of people to tune in, and so they have to find good stuff to talk about. And it doesn't matter if it's true or not. It doesn't matter if it really helps the country or not. It just means that they have to have ratings. And so the corporate-controlled media has in no way, shape, or form any kind of interest in criticizing the TPP because many of the corporate leaders who are involved, sit on the boards of these media conglomerates, are not in any way, shape, or form willing to have any kind of criticism on the air of these kinds of policies. Instead, they focus upon less meaningful stories that keep you and I, who are the viewers, constantly chasing our tails, constantly thinking about things that really don't, that we can't change and really don't matter. So they keep our eye off of the ball that way. And I love what one of the Supreme Court justices once said. He said that sunlight is one of the best of disinfectants. That's really what we need to do, you know, in Washington. And not just speaking of the Supreme Court, you know, they're not innocent either. There was a story that came out earlier in the week that Supreme Court justices three times, actually 90% of the time, are ruling in favor of the companies whose stock that they own. I mean, we have cronyism happening in the Supreme Court. Yeah. I mean, it knows no bounds.
Wow. Yeah, that's very troubling, Jerry. Well, let's, in what time we have left, let's broaden our discussion a little bit. I saw a report today that came out about the Chinese stock market taking a huge crash. I know you've been tracking that. Jerry, what do you see going on there, and what, if anything, are we going to see here as a result?
You know,
of that?
Mike, one of the things that I like to do, I've been doing this for a long time, is I'm a trader. I like to trade. That's how I make my money. That's one of the things that I've done for years. And one of the things that we did was we traded China back in November of 2014. We mentioned on our show, hey, we're going to buy China. We're going to go all in. We bought China, and we wrote it, you know, up 100%. Over the course of about 7 months. It was amazing. And then as it began to come down, we saw the writing on the wall, we got out, and now it's just really beginning to crumble. What was so bizarre about the China story, the Chinese stock market, I think something that really bothers me and bothers a lot of other economic commentators and observers is the fact that we know that China has a communistic bent, right? We know that they're communistic. We know that. We know that they have a iron fist upon the markets. We know this. But the fact that they've done a pretty good job lately of hiding that. They really haven't really exposed that. They've tried to appear more free market. Well, what happened with this latest crash was that the market completely caved in. And after it did, China stepped in and really began some gargantuan types of measures to prevent the sell-off. They prevented large shareholders, those who owned 5% or more of any company, from selling any shares for the next 6 months. They began pumping in lots of cash through their securities organization to be able to actually go out into the market and buy shares. They halted all IPOs, so no new IPOs could come on board. They made it illegal for others, including the ones that I mentioned before, to actually sell shares. It was illegal to short shares. So they did all of these things, and it really shocked, I think, a lot of us here in the U.S. and in the West as we were investing, thinking, wow, you know, this is really something. And it brings up that idea of if they have that much control and power over the market, they could literally seize some of these companies, and you would lose your money. So it turned some stomachs here in the United States. Some of the top hedge fund managers that I respect, you know, made comments that there was no way they were going to get back into China because of what had happened. I feel somewhat similar. The Chinese stock market is certainly risky at this point. It is certainly tumultuous and volatile. However, there's an old saying, you know, don't fight the Fed, referring to the Federal Reserve. Don't fight when the Fed's pumping in money. Don't fight the Fed because it's going to get what it wants. And there's another phrase that says, don't battle Beijing. And it's the same thing. Beijing wants a higher stock market. Why do they want a higher stock market? Well, they want a higher stock market because at the end of the year, it's being proposed for the Chinese yuan to be adopted as one of the reserve currencies at the IMF. This would give it the same status as the dollar or the pound or the euro. Mm-hmm. And so they're trying to, you know, kind of give themselves a nice little shoeshine before their meeting with the IMF. Mm-hmm. And they want a nice, stout stock market. And they became so desperate in their attempts to prop up the market, it spooked everybody. Kind of showed their hand. But we still think, believe it or not, we still think that the Chinese market is going to continue to go higher in the coming months. Not forever, obviously. But in the long haul, we believe that China will be one of those markets that will outperform because China is very much like the United States was as Britain was going down and the United States was coming up. Remember, there was a lot of rough times. There wasn't a lot of wasn't a lot of regulation in early 20th century America. We had our Great Depression, and then we got smart and started putting in regulations. You know, China may have to have that come to Jesus moment. They may have to have that Great Depression that completely wipes out a lot of wealth before they begin to really implement some regulations that will protect investors as well as foreign investors. So we'll see. But believe it or not, we still are bullish on China long haul. But in the near term, you know, we'll have to see it. It's probably going to be pretty scary.
Yeah. Will this have any impact on their efforts to create the Asian bank, Jerry?
Well, they've already created the AIIB. They've already created some other things as well, the BRICS Development Bank. And that's actually opened in I believe it's in Shanghai. Maybe it's in Beijing. I can't remember now exactly where it's at, but that's not the point. The point is that, yes, it will in some ways. However, we've already seen that this current sell-off in the market in the Chinese market has already halted some deals that China had with Russia because, obviously, they have to keep their eye on the ball here. The stock market imploding is not what China needs right now. They're trying to do all of these other ambitious things. They don't need a stock market crash. So they are kind of tapping the brakes on some of their other projects to make sure this doesn't implode. I don't think it's going to stop their momentum globally, but I think it's going to certainly slow it down until they can get, you know, a handle on what's happening. And today's sell-off, or maybe I guess it was yesterday for them, 8.5% sell-off in one day. That was the biggest sell-off. That was the biggest sell-off they've had since 2007. It was a very scary moment for Chinese investors, and you know, we'll have to kind of see what happens. Now this week, the Federal Reserve is going to be having their meeting, and it'll be real interesting to see how they respond to what's happening in China. Will they, you know, continue these low interest rates? Are they going to go ahead and hike them in September? There's all kinds of speculation about what they're going to do, but no doubt what's happening in China right now has to be a little concerning, you know, to the folks at the Federal Reserve as they're talking about raising interest rates. This has to be a little concerning to them, I'm sure.
Sure. Well, while all eyes are on the Chinese stock market and what's going on there and their efforts with their own economy, Greece has kind of gotten lost in the shuffle. I had to look a little bit to find any stories on them. What's going on with that debt crisis?
Well, Greece is just one of those countries that borrowed and borrowed and borrowed and was not able to keep up with the Joneses. It just kind of imploded on them. And, you know, the Eurozone as a whole, the way that we've always talked about the Eurozone, I've always looked at the Eurozone, is that it is the template, Mike. If you believe that there's going to be a global government, as I do, I believe one day these egomaniacs are going to eventually have a global government. I mean, this is kind of scary to think, but they're actually going to, I believe, one day achieve it. But they can't do it if they can't make, you know, a handful of countries jive. And so you take Europe, for example, and you put, you know, nearly 20 countries into the Eurozone, and you have all of these different languages, you have different tax rates, you have different, you know, interest rates. They all had different central banks. They all had, you know, different histories and cultures. They all had different unemployment rates. And you just push them all together and say, now you're going to have one currency and now you're going to have one interest rate. What's the purpose of that? Well, the purpose of that is to create the template for what you're eventually going to have is a global government that pushes all countries together, and they have to deal with all these different countries at the same time. So Europe is really an experiment, and Greece is kind of a test tube. It's kind of a guinea pig. It's kind of like, how do we handle a country that doesn't want to be a part of the club or can't afford to be a part of the club? How are we going to handle this? So Germany, who really is the de facto leader of the Eurozone, along with the bunch in Brussels, has been very firm with Greece, but at the same time, they're not willing to let them go. Because remember, if Greece leaves the Eurozone, it's going to have a great ally in Russia. And that's the very last thing.
Yes.
That's the very last thing the Europeans want, is Moscow having a nice foothold right in the smack dab in the center of Europe. So they kind of have to keep Greece coddled and in the fold, but they also have to appear as the domineering parent who is not going to allow the child to get away with bloody murder, you know.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's an excellent analysis. Thank you for that, Jared. So, well, what are you telling your listeners on your program, Follow the Money Daily? Well, what are you telling them about the economic outlook for the remainder of this year and perhaps early 2016?
Well, economic outlooks are very tough. You know, one of the things that we've told our listeners is that, you know, all markets go in one of three directions. They go up, they go down, and they go sideways, whether that's, you know, interest rates, whether that's the dollar currency, whether it's the stock market, whether it's gold, whether it's real estate. I mean, all markets move in one of three directions. And the problem is when you try to guess which direction they're going to go. And one of the things I've learned over time is that the most amount of money that I've made, or the way that I've made my money in the markets, is by not guessing, but instead by following the money. That's why we call our organization Follow the Money. Mm-hmm. So if the trend is up, we go up, you know, and we don't fight the trend. We go with the trend. So as far as the economic outlook, I'm not really sure right now what the market's going to do tomorrow. I have no clue, but I do know this. It has been going up, and now it's going sideways. So that's telling me that only one of two possibilities are going to exist from here. Either we're going to continue higher, in which case we're going to hop back, you know, on and ride higher, or it's going to begin going down. And in that case, we're going to use innovative different financial products to make money off of that. You know, there's three ways to make money off of a declining market. One is to short stocks. I don't do that. That's too risky for my taste. The second way to make money on a declining market is to use ETFs, exchange-traded funds. Today, there's all kinds of ETFs that exist now that literally go up in value when the underlying index goes down. So, like, let's say that you thought the S&P 500 was going to just fall off a cliff, or maybe you think that the NASDAQ is just due for a really sharp pullback. Well, you can buy, you know, an ETF that is designed to go up whenever the NASDAQ goes down, or you can buy an ETF that is designed to go up whenever the S&P 500 goes down, or any other thing that you can think of, gold or oil. And so those are the kinds of things that we like to use whenever we sense that a new downtrend is forming. And then, of course, another thing that you can do is you can use options. We teach all of these things at our website, followthemoney.com. People can learn, you know, different strategies. But as far as preparing, I urge people to go through our five levels. We have a completely free course online, Mike. It's at our website. They go there and they just hit the Get Started button, and they can go through all of this huge free series of courses that explains how to break free financially, what to do. I mean, step by step. In fact, it's the same exact process my wife and I used to break free financially many years ago. And we make it available for free on our website.
Wow, that's a great, great tool. And that is located at followthemoney.com. Followthemoney.com. Where else can our listeners find you on the web?
Well, let's see. They can always find us on social media. They can they can look us up. You know, the name of our website is Follow the Money Daily. So it's ftmdaily.com or followthemoney.com. They all get you there. Or you could also look up our ministry site. You know, we actually I started off as an economist and as a minister, and I have continued to have to wear both hats. And it's so funny. Whenever I was in college, I went to the guidance counselor, and I was trying to figure out what to do because I really had a great interest in economics, and I really had an interest in ministry. And she was telling me, well, the Bible says you can't serve both and stuff. And she was telling me all of this. And I later realized why I was so interested in both. It's because money is the chief competitor for our hearts, and God knows it. You know, the mm-hmm. Bible, as the as God yeah. bless his soul and rest his soul, Larry Burkett once said, over 2,350 verses on money, wealth, and possessions. And why does God talk about that so much in the Bible? Not because he wants us all to get rich, but instead because he knows that it is the one single thing that can really trip us up. It's very easy to worship money in this culture. And yes. so I wanted to gain some sort of knowledge on how these two combine. And so I really believe that money, in a major way, is one of the greatest deceivers in America. And that's one of the things that we try to bring. So if people are interested in our message from a spiritual perspective, and they don't get enough of it on our Follow the Money broadcasts and our work, they can just go straight to our ministry site. And that is Jerry Robinson Ministries International. It's just JRMisandMaryI.org. There they can find all kinds of you know, great articles and videos and podcasts that they can use to further their spiritual journey.
Jerry, thank you so very much. It's been a great conversation. I know it's been very encouraging and equipping for our listeners. So thank you for joining me.
It was a great
today.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me, Mike.
You're welcome. Soaring Eagle Radio is a production of Transforming Word Ministries and is released under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 4.0 International License. You may subscribe to the show on iTunes, follow us on Facebook, where you can discuss this episode, and follow Soaring Eagle Radio on Twitter at Soaring Eagle Rad. And of course, you can listen to every episode from our website, www.soaringeagleradio.com. The opening audio montage collection was created by Micah 68 Productions. Visit them on the internet at www.mika68.com for more information. Friends, remember the Apostle Paul's admonition to the believers meeting in Rome. Therefore, I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice, acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. I'm your host, Mike Spaulding. Thank you for joining us today for this edition of Soaring Eagle Radio.
Thanks for tuning in today to the Soaring Eagle Radio program. For more information about the show, write us at Soaring Eagle Radio, 682 West Grand Avenue, Lima, Ohio, 45801. You may also contact Mike directly by email at the following address, PastorMike@woh.rr.com. God bless you today as you seek him.